One of your more debate-filled clips was when you guys were talking about how hard marriage is.
There have been moments where I've wanted to leave.
Yeah, you want to get out of here.
Because I'm like, it shouldn't be this hard.
I think that marriage is always that hard.
Ugh. Our foundation was breaking in our home. Yvette's foundation was breaking with her family. And my foundation was breaking with the business. Because my ambition was getting the best of me. There was a point where one of my oldest son would stop talking when I came in the room because he thought I would have a camera.
When I did quit my job, it was not the most ideal time to do that. And it was probably more of a selfish decision than anything kind of keeping.
But tell her why, though.
Sometimes I wondered why you hadn't left, especially with the first 6 years of our marriage, like where sex was such a huge issue. I was like, this fool about to either have an affair or we're about to end the relationship.
How do you keep the love alive?
I would say that you don't marry who you end up with. The true value is loving that person to completion. I'm invested in her for the rest of my life. This is the moment that I knew it was possible. We were doing our first home birth and the birds were singing outside the whole day. And as soon as she would start to have this contraction, the birds would stop chirping. The whole house was in tune to her body. And I heard God whisper, like, you can have this much harmony in your home. It could be like this all the time.
Hi, lovers. How are you guys doing? Class is in session. Everyone get settled in your chairs. All right, so when are relationships hard?
I don't see how relationships with intimate partners should be that difficult. I think it's more, you have to definitely put effort.
I have always met people that share two different mantras. Most people say that relationships are hard. But occasionally you get people who say it's not hard. Relationships are work. It could be good work, it could be bad work. You believe it's magic.
Someone actually gave me the word today of like sweat equity, which basically means things that you do that often get overlooked, but they do take time, effort, consistency. And then through that, you're gonna be able to see a big payoff, but they aren't necessarily the things that you do that create the big payoff. So I'm like, relationships are a lot of easy work, right? Like remembering that your partner needs half an hour every day when they come home from work to decompress. Remembering to turn down the music before you leave the car because they get overstimulated if they walk into an environment where it's just blaring music. Like it's those small, easy tasks built up over time that create a fluid connection. And so when we place so much emphasis on the hard components of it, we overlook how majority of getting along with somebody are really kind of mundane, simple tasks that shouldn't be decreased in value either. But there definitely was a time in my life where that idea that relationships are hard was my personal mantra to keeping myself in my own personal hell. And that's the reason why I've been so passionate about fighting back against that narrative.
One of the most dangerous quotes I have ever been told before is relationships take hard work. That is the victim's anthem, right? When you're going through an abusive cycle with somebody, you're in a negative, toxic relationship, that is what you tell yourself to get through it, that this is how it's supposed to be. And that if you want something good, you have to go through the bad in the process. And I'm just like, no, no. If you are struggling, backbreaking, heartbreaking, soul crushing, struggling to make something work, it's not supposed to work.
But like I said, the joy of this podcast is that I get to hear different perspectives and you all get to hear different perspectives intimately. And then you get to have a change of heart. And that's what this really offered me. So I wanted to pass on the ways that I am now changing my mantra from relationships shouldn't be hard to there are times when relationships are going to be hard. So we're gonna go over 10 different times that relationships in essence are going to go through challenging times. And some checkpoints that you should go through in order to assess whether it is your connection that's the issue, or if you're going through a time that statistically other connections have also greatly struggled. And knowing that in advance, seeing that massive wave come towards you and knowing, okay, we're about to hit a big wave, versus being flipped upside down by the tide, not knowing what happened and turning to your partner and feeling all the flustered feelings, I think can make a very big difference. So in this episode, you're going to get a very unique, privileged look at a couple willing to take you inside of the hard parts. Throughout the episode, I'm also going to put infographics to help you understand why challenges like the ones that they have faced make an easy love hard to hold on to. Because I think that is the important context that's often left out. It's not that relationships are hard, period, but they are likely to be hard when... dot, dot, dot. So look out for those graphics and stay till the end for further explanation. First, let's chat with authors Yvette and Glenn Henry. So this is the book that you've always wanted to write.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank
you. It's out for pre-order right now. Give me the elevator pitch. Actually, I'm going to ask Yvette to give me the elevator pitch.
Woo!
Okay? Because you probably heard it a million times before.
I think this book is for anyone who was not fathered well. And changing their inner voice to speak to them in the way that they needed to hear as a young person or a child. Giving them permission to speak to themselves that way.
Did I do good?
You did good, babe. No, you did good. Yeah,
I should practice that.
I love how you put people on the spot.
You know
what I'm saying?
Like,
that was really good. No, I really understood in this process how better of a father I am than anything else. I'm really good at being a dad. I can recognize the needs of my children. I serve them well. But when it comes to serving myself, my inner voice was developed by, you know, my abusive mother growing up. And so I had to change that. And I started to really apply all the things that I was applying to my children, to myself. And it's been really healing for me. And I literally have to talk to myself as my father. You know, you're not gonna die. You're gonna be okay. This is just a moment for you. Breathe. You've always succeeded before. You know, you can do it right now. You know, it's like a lot of that. And my father, you know, I lived in Baltimore, grew up, and then in the summers I would visit Cali, and that's where my dad was. It was like joint custody. And every parent, I think, will say, yeah, I did the best I could, you know, and that's really valid. But sometimes it's not enough, you know, you need more. And I didn't really understand how much I needed until I was able to give it. And even getting married was like one of those things where I'm so sorry, because she led our relationship for like probably the first 10 years, I would say.
Ooh. Wow. That long?
Yeah, I think it was about 10 years. Like,
and you guys got together at what age?
We got married at, I was 23, he was 25. I don't know what.
We got married, I was married at 25.
And how old did you start dating?
It's like a year before that.
Yeah.
You weren't engaged for 9 months.
Well, your prefrontal cortex wasn't developed.
Yeah.
You weren't even really baked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was, we were a little crazy, I think, in the beginning. But I would say that you don't marry who you end up with. Right. In the relationship, it starts one way, but that person is going to change over and over and over again. And the true value is loving that person to completion. Right. Like, I'm invested in her for the rest of my life.
What allowed you to lean into this dream, though? Because it worked out. I mean, we're here. We have a book in front of us. You guys have a very successful channel now. You have millions of subscribers and followers, millions of people who you've positively impacted. You know, kids who are being raised by a qualified world-class teacher and an amazing world-class father. So this story worked out. But what change had to happen to go from shifting leaders in the relationship? Because I don't think I've ever even heard it sort of explained that way.
I think what happened was when we got married, I was literally starting my teaching career. And so because I was so like, I went to college to become a teacher, I'm teaching, I'm doing everything that I set out to do. And now we're in relationship with each other. And Glenn, at the time that we got married, was doing music. And so for me, I grew up
with... She believe in me.
I didn't, it's not that I didn't believe in him, but I was like, okay, so how long are we gonna do this before we're like, okay, I'm not making any money from this. I'm constantly on the road and gone. You know, like, I had never seen anyone personally close to me in proximity that like made it to be like the next Beyonce or Kendrick Lamar or whatever. I'm just saying, Kendrick Lamar. I changed it.
I believe in your Beyonce.
You know, I wasn't like, I was like, I don't know. And at the time, I didn't know who Kendrick Lamar was. But, you know, I didn't see that. It was not anything that I had evidence of. So it wasn't, for me, music for people that I was in close proximity with. It was more of a hobby than an actual career. And so after a while, we started having children. You know, 3 years into our marriage, I got pregnant. And then when that child was barely off the boob, we got pregnant again. And so I was kind of like, what are we doing here? And then by the time that I think we said we would give it 5 years.
Yes. And then after the 5 years was up, you had that, what's your 5-year plan conversation?
Yes. So we'd give it 5 years to see, like, is this popping off like we need it to pop off in order for this to be your primary thing. And then, and somewhere in there, I also got pregnant with our third child, which was my daughter. And I had always wanted our daughter. I had always wanted a girl. And so during that time, I was already having like this internal debate or like tension about being in a classroom full of students while my husband was at home with our two sons. And so there was a lot of times when I'd be like literally having an out of body experience in my classroom, like I could be home with my kids right now. What am I doing here with y'all type thing? And so when I found out I was having a girl, I most definitely was like, you will not raise my daughter.
Yeah.
Like obviously we're raising these children together, but I was like, nah, because my boys loved him. Still do. They still love him. And now that I'm the primary parent at home, I know there's a lot of times when they're like, what happened to dad? He was fun. Because now I'm the structured, we're homeschooling, we got to do things type mom. And then they're like, dad used to put diapers on his head and chase us around the house. And you know what I mean?
Diapers on the head because of the sweat. I'm bald. So it soaks up the sweat really cool too. So,
That does make sense. Like those diapers helmet. Are literally phenomenal.
Yeah.
I had a sleepover with my girls this weekend and I could hear them pee at night. The amount of urine that was coming out of their bodies. I'm like, there's no way this diaper's holding that.
Wow.
And it did.
Wow.
So, yes.
They work really well.
Absorbent.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, so then when I quit my job, it was not the most ideal time to do that. And it was probably more of a selfish decision than anything kind of keeping.
But tell her why, though.
Why what?
Like how you did it.
So.
We just healed in this place, too. So we could talk about it.
So. Yeah, I just kind of was like, yeah, I'm not going back.
Yeah, she didn't tell me. She quit her job without telling me, and that built like some trust issues between us. And so then she goes, what's your 5-year plan? And I was like, I don't know, whatever God has for us. I'm not tripping. And she's like, I trust you with my family and my future, and you don't have 5 years planned out? And then that was the moment where I was like, I couldn't sleep. Like she rolled over and went to sleep and I was just like, oh my gosh, like what is my plan? Like I have no direction. And so once I figured out like, okay, I wanna be, I love music and I can still write music, but I wanna be telling people how great it is to be a father, because I never knew until I saw proof of good fatherhood. And that's when I decided to start the channel. Now, when I started the channel, Yvette was cool with it, but she didn't really like how I was trying to keep it too thorough.
What do you mean by that?
Like I was trying to make sure people understood the real. Like I wasn't cleaning the house. Mm. We was ashy.
My bras were hanging up on the doorknob.
You know what I'm saying? Like it was very hood, but it was like, this is real life. Because like sometimes it doesn't look like a set. Like it looks, you know, troublesome. It's like, is everything okay here? You know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's a lot. Like I would be lazy. Like I would put the kids clothes on, their pants on, but I would put the onesie over.
Even though like I was the working parent and he was a primary parent at home, I still felt like our home was a reflection of me in some way. And so that's where the like.
It was a little embarrassing.
Yo.
When we started that process and she started to see the effect and people saying, oh, I never wanted to be a dad until I saw this. I haven't talked to my dad in 8 years and this video made me want to give him a call. We realized the reconciliation that was happening. Mm-hmm. And it got to the point where I started to see it and I was trying to explain it to her, but she still, because of her stuff with her dad, him trying several different businesses and not ever making anything happen, it was like she didn't really believe in it. She didn't trust me. And so I had to just say, hey, like, you asked me what my 5-year plan was. I told you, I'm working it out. I need you to kind of like chill.
And so that's the conversation, like getting back to when I came home, you know, we're all home. Glenn's home, he's working on the videos. I'm home with the kids, our newborn daughter. Mm-hmm. And I had a false hurt or like hope of what life at home would be like. And that it would include us just all hanging out all day, but not really giving Glenn the space he needed to work or even like acknowledging the importance or value of that time. And so that conversation came from him being like, yo, you asked me what my 5-year plan is. I now have a plan. You've been leading the way for the past however many years. It's my turn to take the lead. And this is what it's going to be. So I have to turn into a new person in order to lead this family the way that you really want me to lead it. Mm-hmm. And then me actually acknowledging like, oh, I asked for this.
Because when I would be working in the garage and she would be like, well, I don't got my shoes on and it's a dirty diaper right here. I'll just get it as close to the trash can as I can. She just throw a dirty diaper in the garage while I'm like editing video. I would feel like it's insulting because I smell it. And I got, you know what I mean? So it was like we were having, and I was building up this wall that she didn't believe in me with the music and she doesn't believe in me with this. I was like making a story up and building a case against her, mainly because of some mommy stuff I was supposed to handle that I never did. Yvette was saying to me, I want to trust you, right? And let me know if I'm off here. Mm-hmm. Feel free to interrupt at any moment. I want to trust you, but in the past, I've watched men kind of take their ambitions way too far. So what I'm going to do, just in case you don't keep your word, I'm going to invest into a community of women and other people. Just in case you lose your mind, I have a fallback plan, right? So she had begun investing time, energy into community, into like a local village, some friends of ours. But she was putting stock in like a lot of trust in them instead of what we were doing. So I was at war with her like, hey, I need you to come along and get on this thing. But that was mainly because of what happened in her childhood. Now I'm looking at me who really needs support, who never got support from my mom, wishing I could have support from my wife, but I see her investing in these other people and I'm like having this, like, come on. Like, so we're both like trying to communicate to each other, but we can't even really say that, Yvette, I need you to trust me and I need you to come along board. And she goes, hey Glenn, I need you to like, I really need you not to screw me over. You know, I need to be able to trust you. So we're having these really interesting conversations about trust, but it's coming up in arguments about how I'm spending my time and arguments about how she's doing the village. So I would say, yeah, we made it. I think we made it like kind of bumping through like conversations and seasons. It has not been a smooth ride. And I think even just in the past year and a half, 2 years maybe, when we moved to a farm, we moved to Hemet. You know where that is?
Yep.
It's gross. Don't go to Hemet, man.
Where you live?
No, we lived.
We
on live, the way.
We don't live there anymore.
Okay,
we
good. Lived. I was like, it's a terrible thing to talk about place you
no,
live.
No. We don't live there no more. But we lived in on a farmland, you know, desert, snakes, rattlesnakes, coyotes, stealing the chickens, like really weird.
There was some sweetness about it, so don't let them. It was, I think if circumstances had been different and we lived there, it
was
would
very
have been
quiet.
Really sweet.
But we moved there. Sorry, go ahead, babe.
Go ahead.
Sorry. She loves that place.
There was charm. Yeah. There it is.
Okay, yeah. I'm speaking from frustration because it was a lot of rat carcasses and stuff like that. It was like stuff. It was hard for me being from Baltimore and moving there. But either way, we got there. And we were able to separate ourselves from a lot of the outside influences and just kind of find each other again.
Yeah, I feel like it was a family sabbatical.
Because my ambition was getting the best of me. Mm. There was a point where one of my oldest son would stop talking when I came in the room because he thought I would have a camera. Like, I wasn't just losing trust with her, I was losing trust with my children as well. And the business was growing, and you know, we had a huge office and several employees, and we were on the way to making, closing so many good deals, and being extremely successful on paper. But it's like, who cares if you're not really doing the fatherhood work?
What an interesting sort of juxtaposition in those years between the years of devoting your life to your kids by being a stay-at-home dad, yeah, and not feeling like you're able to contribute to your family in a very specific way, financially, through leadership, through allowing Yvette the rest and time with her kids that she desired, and then flipping that and then having almost the complete opposite problem.
Yes, where I'm too focused on money, I'm too focused on ambition, and everyone's looking at me, and I walk into the house and the tone changes, I kind of kill the vibe a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I hated that season. Even though it was like financially, it was great, but it was like, man, I'm losing what I value so much.
Because you used to be diaper dad.
I used to be the blanket warrior. I get in the blanket and the children were running. I'd suck them into the blanket, tickle them. It was so much fun. I lost a lot. I lost a lot in that time because I started to sense the disconnection, and it was really sad for me, but I didn't know how to get it back and also provide. So we ended up, we sold our house. And we were talking earlier, and I told you that our foundation was breaking in our home. Yvette's foundation was breaking with her family, and my foundation was breaking with the business. So we had literally like this very interesting moment where we realized that our foundations were broken and we had to move and leave. And so the farm, though tough, was very like important for us because we were able to sit in silence and like grow together. Like, it took us 10 minutes to get to the main street, and it was a dirt road, so we had like alignments all jacked up, tires rotated, it didn't matter, we got stuck out there a few times. It was tough,
but you get to actually see each other, mm-hmm, see yourselves, and see how you're reflected in each of your relationships. Yes.
Yeah.
In a
yeah.
city life where it's so busy, so many interactions, extracurriculars, daycare, school, like there's not really enough time to actually like look into the eyes, mm-hmm, of the person that you love and see yourself back in yeah. terms of how they see you. So I can imagine that being both a really gruesome time, mm-hmm, and also a very healing time.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I'm like, that's where we wrote the book. I spent time out there writing the book, and it was very quiet,
Oh, that's beautiful. Because when you also mentioned the book, I thought of the book, The Shelter.
Do you mean The Shack?
The Shack.
Yeah.
I was thinking that.
Thank you.
The Shelter. Yeah. The Shack. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess in many places that was your version of The Shack.
Yes.
A charming shack.
Yeah.
We have like a really great opportunity as parents. And I don't think we really understand that this is like the opportunity of a lifetime and the most impactful role you will play.
Yeah.
No matter how many millions of people you connect with, your children, like that, it will ripple throughout time.
Yeah.
Like how you raise them will affect how they raise their kids and so on and so on. And so we have this really great opportunity. And I think the fact that I can see that in her, she can see that in me, but I'm also like actively pursuing my children so that they understand how much I love them in a world that doesn't. Like everything this world has to offer us is the opposite of what we need and the opposite of what our inner child needs.
Well, actively pursuing stood out to me because I, as your brain does, I fill in the blank. Actively pursuing my dreams, actively pursuing my ambitions. But you said I'm actively pursuing my children. And then in reflection of that, we should be actively pursuing our romantic partner, yeah, actively pursuing ourselves.
After my sister passed away in 2021, it was very traumatic for me because she's like the only woman from my youth that like pursued me. Like she always wanted her big brother around. And I was kind of jealous because she had my dad all the time and I didn't, but she passed away in 2021, breast cancer, August 14th. And then Yvette started grieving like really hard. And it got to a point where she wasn't doing well and I wasn't doing well, but she wasn't doing well real bad, And she had mentioned that she wanted to go away. She was like, I want to go. She had heard about like a retreat a silent retreat where you up there with a therapist, and it's like somewhere in Seattle or up there in Washington. And she's like, you know, I want to go there so I can figure out what's going on with me, because I'm not feeling very positive about life right now. Like, it was real dark. And like, I was so irritated. I was so like selfishly like, what? You want to leave right now? Like, my sister just, and you're ready to go? And she's like, yeah, I need this. And she kept telling me that. Go ahead, babe.
I will say that what happened was the grief that, I think grieving the passing of his sister unlocked, it was like a familiar grief that I had been living with. You know what I mean? Like, it was like there was a, what's that word I'm looking for? Dormant grief kind of existing in my existence. But then with her passing, it was like the floodgates just kind of opened and I didn't know what to do with it all. And I would find myself like standing at the kitchen sink, just kind of staring out like, I'm not doing well. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm really not doing well. And so we were in couples therapy at the time, and we were going back and forth about who knows what it was at the time. But I kind of like, I just want you to know, this is how bad I'm doing. I'm doing so bad that I looked into this 3-week intensive in Washington that I really would like to go with. And so I kind of had just mentioned it. At the time, I didn't say I was going. No. I just want to clarify that.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, I was already considering the fact, like, he's the one that just lost his sister. Like, why is this impacting me in this way? And so, I don't know. I feel like it's worth it to say that you came back after I said that and you were like, you should go.
Yeah, but I'm going to tell you right now, it wasn't from a place of abundance.
Yeah.
I was like, well, go. Fine. Go. If you feeling that bad, then go. It wasn't from a place of care. It wasn't from a place of protection. It was like, well, you're going to leave, then leave. But while she was gone, I was able to talk to a mentor, and he was able to help me understand that, like, as the leader of our home, it's important for me to have like my best person at 100%. Like, I don't need her at 40 or 20%. Like, I need her strong. And so you're not gonna understand that. And if you would have told me, hey, you're gonna get married to someone and then they're gonna leave you and not speak to you for 2 weeks, like, that would have, I would have, like, I'm not signing up for that. But of course, I'm young and ignorant. I didn't know. But there was a lot of times that we don't trust our spouse, we don't trust our children with themselves. And I think growing up is me being able to say, I trust you with yourself. I don't know what you need, but I know that you need something and I can't give it to you, so I trust you to find that. And that's scary. It just was like a very beautiful process, and it puts me in a position to know that, like, I don't really know her. Like, there's still more to discover about my wife. Even though I feel like I have a master's degree in this woman, like, I'm still going to be learning her as she grows and trusting her with yourself. It's like, I feel like our best years are still ahead of us. It's like really dope.
I thought about that also in reflection. You guys had, you have an amazing podcast. I adore it.
Thank you.
And one of your more salacious, or I think like sort of debate filled clips you put out recently was when you guys were talking about how hard marriage is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There have been moments where I've wanted to leave.
Yeah, you want to get out of here.
Because I'm like, it shouldn't be this hard.
Do you still believe it shouldn't be this hard and it shouldn't be this much work?
I believe I've worked through the hard and put in a lot of work. And so it should at some point start to get easier. And I do believe that it's getting a little smoother, right?
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Are we aligned in this belief?
No. Go ahead. Wait. Go ahead. I think that marriage is always that hard.
Ugh.
Now, you have seasons where it's not as like eventful, but imagine one of us is going to die. Like, our hearts are going to be broken. Like, we're going to have to lose family members together. Mm. And trying to love each other through that is hard. Marriage is the most hard. It's the hardest thing you're going to do. The most, like, rewarding and pleasurable thing you'll probably ever do as well.
Now, hearing your story, I can color in, you know, what that really meant to you. But it also really reflects in how hard self-actualization is.
I actually have something to say. When we, because that clip did go viral, or I don't know if you call it viral, it got a lot of attention and sparked a lot of conversations. We were talking to a friend and she actually described it as tender. You know, like marriage is tender. And when something's tender, you take a little bit of extra care with it. There's just a lot of life that gets thrown at you all at the same time. And because you've made that covenant commitment to each other, it's not as easy to just go your separate ways. And so it becomes tender because you want to care for his heart and your heart. And then when you add children to the mix, their hearts. So it's tender, I would say,
yeah,
versus hard.
But the communication itself, like working through some of those feelings is difficult. It's mm-hmm. definitely a mystery. Because I'm not sure, like my hope is that you understand that I want to protect you and the family and I want to mm-hmm. be successful for us. This is not a selfish thing, mm-hmm. right? And she's like, well, that's not my experience. My experience is that, you know, as a man, you're going to let your ambition run wild and you're going to forget about your family, you know? And I'm like, well, that's the hard part, the communication. But once she can get down to little Glenn and be like, oh, this dude really wants to do well for his family, and little Yvette, you know, really wants the security that she needs, then we can start to care for each other differently. And so we can trust each other with ourselves.
How do you keep the love alive? Does the love have to be alive the entire time?
How do we keep the love alive? Does it have to be alive? As a mom, or as me as a mom, like my kids' needs are easy to meet. So a lot of my attention and like the things that I would do, it just came easy. It was like, oh, you need this? I got it. You know, I could feel a need. With Glenn, it hasn't always been that way. And a lot of my attention was like here because it was an obvious, I know how I can show up here. Here, it hasn't always been obvious. And so when I shifted my focus to prioritize my husband over my kids, and some people may not agree with this, but like when I prioritize this part of our relationship, I feel like everyone else benefits. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is another way that we keep the love alive. It's like, we know that at the end of the day, these kids are gonna get married, or maybe not, I don't know, whatever they choose to do, they're gonna go have their own lives.
They're gonna get up out of there.
And sure. It's just gonna be.
Eventually, they're getting up out of there.
And it's, you know, just gonna be Lando. Us. And so for me, I just wanna make sure when they're all gone that I can still look at him and enjoy his company.
Yes.
And like love him well. And Glenn has always been good at that. Like he has always loved me well. When he says that he is a student of me, he has truly 1,000% been a student of me, and he 100% has a master's degree, like you said earlier.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you had that experience, like being a mom, like, are you learning more?
Oh, of course, yeah. I'm learning all the time. It's giving me a profound aha too, just on the relationship between the effort you put in, the preparation you do, and your ease at which you're able to navigate it, because you also know what to expect through it. Like, I don't necessarily relate to marriage being hard, but I have studied obsessively about relationships. Kids is so fucking hard for me.
Okay. Tell me more.
So hard. I just didn't, you know, even hearing Yvette, how you're a teacher, like that amount of skill that you acquired or learned, ability to understand and to not take things personal and to shift, to have a vision and it not be executed and not take that personal. Like, there's a million different nuances that come with child rearing, the time component, how much time it takes for them to adopt a new concept. That is like insane for me. You know, like there was a time in my life before we had kids where I forgot kids even existed because I lived in Hollywood. I never saw those motherfuckers. Entering my own kids, I have little to none. I lived with kids at one point. My sister had them, but I lived in the basement. They lived upstairs. And I now acknowledge, like, I thought I was helping. I wasn't doing shit,
mm-hmm.
you know.
What were you doing? Like, you had, like, chores or, like...
You know, you're around once in a while. You'll watch for 10 minutes here and there. Even if you're doing 10 minutes a day, that's nothing.
Yeah.
It's kids are all the time.
But when you don't have kids, 10 minutes is a lot of time.
It is a lot of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it absolutely... And you think that's what it's taking.
Yes.
And then you think about oh, this is 10 minutes. So you try to multiply the feeling that you would have by doing that 10 minutes over several hours. And you think that that's what it is. Mm. And it's completely different when it's 4 consecutive hours versus 10 minute blocks of time. So there's just a million different ways in which this role has completely blasted me open, shifted me, made me deeply. And it's just been a very bumpy ride, enjoyable in all the right ways. And the beautiful thing about children is I know I can't divorce them. So
there's no getting out.
There's like, that's it. Actually, as I'm listening to your guys' story, I'm curious if that ever came into it, or were you able to navigate these bumps with the inherent knowingness that we're doing this together?
Divorce? If divorce ever came into it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was on my way out. There was a point where I realized that Yvette was so, like, focused on the people not in our home, but the external relationships he had. She was jeopardizing our relationship. Yeah, and it took for her to have an outside relationship, like a mentor, another woman to call her out and say, sis, I don't know if you're on point here, right? I was trying to get, I couldn't explain it. I couldn't get through to her. And that was really frustrating because I'm kind of like, well, I don't know how long I can stand this, right? And that was weird because it wasn't that I wanted to leave her, but I just couldn't not be protected or not have our children. Like, the trust issue was the issue. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it was so difficult. It was really difficult. But yeah, I almost called it quits. I think she was like, he'll never leave me.
No.
Did you think I was going to leave?
I don't know. Sometimes I wondered why you hadn't left, especially with the first 6 years of our marriage, like where sex was such a huge issue.
Yeah.
And it seemed like it was something that I just couldn't break through with. I was like, this fool about to either have an affair or we're about to end the relationship. But for me, divorce became more of something that I thought about because it seemed like no matter how hard I tried to get it right, I just couldn't. And at this point, I'm like, I know I'm doing the work. I know I'm trying. I'm having these hard conversations. I'm listening to you. But for some reason, my brain is just not getting it. And I don't know if I have what it takes to stay and continue to feel like a failure in this relationship. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was like, maybe we should just quit. Because I know I can take care of myself and these kids. And I know you can take care of yourself, too.
Well, I was thinking the kids was coming with me.
I know. He always thinks that.
Parenting is just such a breeze for me. It gets a little complicated. You think it's difficult for me?
But I'm just wondering, like, what are you saying about me?
I ain't saying nothing about you. I'm talking about me.
Oh, okay. I'm just making sure.
I'm just saying for me, it's like.
I think he was more talking about me.
Because you mentioned it.
I'm like, this shit is hard. He's like, this shit is very simple.
I think for me, because I don't know. I don't know what to call it, but the kids only need certain things, right? And they forgive really easy. That's one thing about it. So if you can submit yourself and be like, listen, I know I blew it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to spend the rest of my life trying to get this right. I apologize. I overreacted. Like, they want to trust you and they just want to spend time with you.
That's again to the point of like where you put your attention, where you put your effort and the energy, the pursuing, right? And I guess that's, I'm trying, like I'm so mad that we never even got to sex. It's like the one thing that I can uniquely offer because I just was so enthralled by your story and amazed by your story. And there were times I wanted to just be like that whole line that you had, which I'm going to butcher it now, just about the importance of trusting the other person with themselves. So there were so many places I wanted to go, and that was one of the places that I'm like, I could really take you guys there. We could really go somewhere beautiful, but we just don't have the time to. So maybe you guys would come back for that. But to sort of give people the wrap up of everything, for anybody who's listening, who is nodding, who is feeling that, and maybe for the couple who's sort of in the thick of it, who's in that really bumpy place and they're about to sell their farm and the foundation is cracked, and individuals, they feel cracked. They've gotten to see the cracks, which in itself is a gift. And they know that they're leaving, so they know that they're moving on to something else, but they're just not quite sure what the future holds. What lesson would you pass on to them?
The best thing we did is, like, our new community is, like, made up first of our therapists, who started out as our couples therapists, and then they became our personal therapists. So then when I go, man, she don't like me, he goes, that don't sound like her at all. She seems like she's obsessed with you. You know what I mean? And you probably need to spend more time with her. Maybe you just need a vacation. Like, he's able to say that because he knows her well.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, having community will change everything. Now, sometimes they're trauma bonding, and that ain't healthy. So you got to recognize who is there because they can't survive without you, and who is there to help you, right? In the book, the last chapter, I talk about juggling and how you need relationships that can catch you when you're falling, hold you, and help uplift you. And I think that's a good rule of thumb. Like, in your relationships, how many people can catch you if you're falling? How many people can hold you? And how many people uplift you? And if you don't have those people, then it's probably time to change your community a little bit. Because I do think it's going to affect your relationships.
I feel like the love is always there.
And it may not be the prevailing, love isn't necessarily a feeling, because it's more of a neurotic condition. Because any other feeling is subject to circumstance, right? Like, I feel happy until the house falls on me, and then I no longer feel happy. Whereas love is like your house falls on you and you still feel love.
Yeah.
Like, it's a condition. But it is a profound emotion, and it is a choosing. It is kind of like all of the above and things, but it may not be the prevailing emotion at times. And you can still stay together throughout that. And I feel like your story really exemplified that.
This is the only thing I'm really supposed to get right. Like, this is the greatest asset in my life. And what I give to her, like, I believe I will reap from that. Like, even, like, when she is about to, like, start her menstrual cycle or whatever, if I take steak out, because she likes to eat red meat, like, on day two, like, I start throwing out steak, everybody gets excited. You know what I mean?
Like, the kids are like, the boys are like, Mom, are you on your period?
Woo-hoo! Yes.
Yeah.
I saw that. The good cut.
Yeah, but it's cool because, like, the whole house is in tune. And this is the moment that I knew it was possible. Is I don't hear, like, God speak to me. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, God said this. I don't hear that a lot. But it was one time it happened. I was like, oh, this was for sure God. We were doing our first home birth with my daughter, right? She was about to have Anaya. And when you're at the hospital, you can hear the machines beeping. It's very loud and kind of chaotic. And the machine tells you when you're about to have a contraction. But at a home birth, you don't have that. So Yvette was able to go, I'm about to have a contraction. Someone come close, grab my hand. And the birds were singing outside the whole day. And as soon as she would start to have this contraction, the birds would stop chirping. My youngest son at the time would come over and say, Mom, you're okay. You can do it, Mom. My oldest son kind of backed off because he was a little scared. But the whole house, it was in tune to her body. Like, and I heard God whisper, like, it could be like this all the time. Like, you can have this much harmony in your home, like, if you prioritize your family. And that was a moment that I'm like, I'm trying to get back to that. And I feel like we have. Our home has a song. Like, even when I come into your home, like, I feel comfortable here and I feel harmony. And I don't know what it took to get that. But it's something that people often, when they come into our house, they take off their shoes, they get comfortable, dig into the couch and get a cookie and we talk and laugh. And that's really what I hope that it's like, not just in our home, but also in the presence as we walk out. And that's what I hope our children walk with too. As they grow up and move on, like, there's a certain amount of comfort that comes along with being a part of our family. Yeah.
That was so good. I don't know why I'm whispering. I kind of want to ruin the energy here. That's so good. Thank you, guys.
Amen.
Thank you guys so much. That was amazing. Congratulations on the book. I will shift the energy for this as we get into the CTA for it. Where do people go? How do they get it? What do you want them to do? Why does it matter?
Please go to belieffromfatherhood.com. You can get all the links for this book. It's also available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble's, Christian bookstore. I just want you guys to know that this is the greatest opportunity you will ever have becoming a father, but becoming a parent, really. But the thing is, we always think about this when it's too late. When I first figured I was going to be a dad, I panicked. I stressed out. And I wish I would have known how important it was to sit still. Those first 6-7 months of just holding your baby is an opportunity for you to learn how to sit still. And Father Yourself First is a book that's going to teach you how to sit still with yourself and just notice the moments that you have, not only with your children, but also to yourself. And then once you apply that to yourself, it can replicate throughout the community. And strong families really do change communities, and communities change neighborhoods, neighborhoods change towns, so on and so forth. So I believe we can change the world if we focus on fatherhood the way we're supposed to.
And also, if you're not a father, it's still a good book.
Thanks, babe.
No, I really believe
that. Go ahead and get them black women sales.
No, I'm even talking about the men, like the men out there. I think any man who one day desires to be a father, or even if not, even if you just literally did not have good father in your life, I think this book is really good for you.
Thank you so much to Glenn and Yvette for that really healing and illuminating conversation that inspired this lesson that I'm happy to share with all of you about when we can expect relationships to be hard. And in knowing that they're going to be challenging, how we can better prepare ourselves, whether that be through tools or just through grace and understanding. You're leaving? On that note of just, my baby. Sometimes relationships going through hard times, y'all, I literally have not had a complete work week probably since June. Like, it's always broken up by some kind of travel or some kind of instance or a kid being home or something. And then yesterday, Jared and I had to go to Austin to do something for Bumble. And then we got back last night and then had to get up this morning and like shoot something. And then just like the day has just continuously gone on. And we literally hate each other today. But I'm like, you know what? It's not us. It's just the circumstances of life, the wave that's being hit with us right now, and the fact that we have to try to navigate this together. And whenever you're going through a struggle period, you just look to the person beside you to be like, save me. But we're also in the waters together. So I'm excited to finish this class, take off my makeup, sit in a dark room for 20 minutes, think about nothing, do nothing, reset, and come back to life. But until then, let's get into this list. So I want to say shout out to Glenn and Yvette for such an amazing conversation, and one that I really hope inspires people to go and get Glenn's book, How to Father Yourself. In essence, it's really just about acknowledging that many of us don't get the benefit of having great caregivers, but that doesn't mean that that caregiving role has any less importance. And unfortunately, as many of us have learned in adult years, we may have to pick up the slack retroactively for the kind of care that we didn't get in our childhood years. This also goes back to the episode we had with Lily Singh last week, and a theme that I'm sure we're gonna revisit as we continue to go on and dive into how to create healthy, intimate relationships. And there is a past, present, and future component to that, which I think leads perfectly into this list, which I pray that this list comes before you need it, not in confirmation to what you experienced. But as I'm going through it, if anything does come up for you, please put it in the chat. If you're like, I wish I knew that, or I went through that, or that makes perfect sense, allow it to be a brain dump. And of course, I'll come to you in the end so we can have a reflective piece on it. Are we ready? All right, so when are relationships hard? So the first instance that I thought was so fascinating because I researched this question and what came back is the first 25 years of your life. So you can just expect from age, however, most of us will have our first crush by age 5 years old. Statistically, people get into their first romantic relationship in the preteen years. And so that means for maybe 15 years of your life, relationships are just going to be hard. And that is for a couple of reasons. Number one is being the lack of development of the prefrontal cortex. And that is the part of the brain that has the ability to emotionally regulate, to assess risk. Secondly, 70% of relationships before the age of 25 are going to fail because of identity evolution, which is just the way that you perceive yourself and your role in the world around you. As we get older, we will still experience these same disconnects where we have evolved to a different place, to where our relationship no longer suits the new skin that we're in, but we're going to experience it much less as we get older. Y'all know I love to give the Spotify stat that Spotify predicts that after the age of 33, people will stop looking for new music. So they stop trying to market new music to older listeners. And that's because people get
pretty set in their ways. And that can be a positive thing for relationships because there's more predictability and longevity. That can also be a negative thing because there's an assumption that, well, I knew you before, so I'm going to know you going forward. Of course, we're always changing, but it's going to be at a much less drastic rate. So for that reason, the first 25 years of your romantic life is going to be a little chaotic, which I think is an important note too, because Glenn and Yvette met in their early 20s and got married before age 25. So by basic virtue of that, they have a massive challenge ahead of them. Me, who got married at 33 years old, and I'm saying, well, my relationship hasn't been that hard, is a useless statement. It's a useless comparison because my brain was at a completely different place. And on top of that, I study relationships for a living. So there is just going to be a very big difference in our experience by virtue of those things. The second big time you can expect for relationships to be really hard is within the first year of your two become one phase. And I say that because your two become one phase could be getting married. Your two become one phase could be moving in together. It could be starting a business together, but when you have separate identities that now merge into one, and that merger includes where you live, finances, social reputation, and a bunch of other responsibilities, you can expect for your relationship to be really hard. Fun fact, I worked on a campaign for Kroger's, which is like the tissue company, and they say your first year of marriage, you're supposed to gift a new couple with paper towels and tissues because there's going to be lots of tears and lots of shit to clean up. And I just think rather than giving somebody a toaster, I think giving them that would be so beautiful because it's permission for things not to be blissful honeymoon stage and for that to be okay because it's normal. We are now trying to fit these two worlds into one. Of course, there's going to be spillage. Of course, it's going to get a little messy.
The other day, someone asked about the secret to a lasting marriage, and I said, constant mutual choreography. 5, 6, 7, 8. And that's a beautiful analogy, right? Two people doing tons of incredibly difficult things with planning and rhythm. And the more I visualize that answer, the more I realize how phony it was, because the truth is, doing life with someone looks a whole lot less like this and more like this. And that's when it hit me. A good marriage is like playing the childhood game keep up while you also handle bills, individual goals, outside relationships, maybe kids, maybe pets, etc., etc. And don't get me wrong, often the game has a fun flow to it, but sometimes it's a dumpster fire where the only fun part is knowing you're not in it alone. And once in a while, one of you drops the ball and has to repent. And in extenuating circumstances, one person has to keep it all up alone so the other can heal. Learning to play together is a challenge, and that is why your first year can also be the messiest year of marriage, also known as the paper anniversary.
Okay, I know I've shared a lot so far, so I'm gonna take a little intermission right now, get some water, take a little walk, clear your head. We're gonna come back and do the rest of the list. And for everybody else, this is where the class is going to end. Now, if you would be intrigued to hear the rest of it, no sweat. You can actually attend live tapings of full classes just like this for free by going to loversbyshan.com/community. If you enjoy this class and want even more value, well, that's when you can come into the full access community. And again, you can learn more about that at loversbyshan.com/community. All right, you guys, a couple more minutes and class is back in session.